Nexus PMG welcomes you to the Bigger Than Us podcast, which we as energy geeks lovingly refer to as the BTU. Bigger Than Us is a podcast that focuses on ideas that will shape the future of our planet and ultimately our existence. We will occasionally lean into energy topics because, after all, it's the key to our collective survival, but we'll also explore other ideas and topics that we believe will have an impact that is bigger than us. And now, on to today's show. Hello and welcome to the Bigger Than Us podcast. I'm your host, Raj Daniels, and today I'd like to welcome back to the show, Steve Oldham. Steve Oldham is a prominent entrepreneur and carbon removal advocate. He currently serves as CEO of Captura, where he is leading the commercialization of direct ocean capture, a climate solution that combines innovative technology with the natural carbon removal powers of the ocean to remove CO2 from the atmosphere at scale. Steve, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Raj, and awesome to be back.
Steve, I am super excited to have you back. It's been quite a journey. I think the last time we spoke was 2020, when at the time you were the CEO of Carbon Engineering. Can you give us a brief overview of what happened with Carbon Engineering?
Yeah, it's seems like a long time ago since we talked, but perhaps the reason for that is how quickly the carbon removal sector has developed in the time since. So yes, Carbon Engineering has I think done really well since then. The company's building one of the world's largest direct air capture plants in partnership with Occidental in Texas. And at the end of last year, Occidental made the decision to acquire Carbon Engineering at a valuation of $1.6 billion. So the company is now a part of Occidental, which is a great partner for them. And for myself, I actually moved from Carbon Engineering at the start of 2022 and joined a new company which does ocean-based carbon removal, which I'd be really happy to tell you more about.
Absolutely, and love to hear about Captura. But before we do, you know, we spoke in 2020. There were some green shoots regarding direct air capture. People were still on the fence, perhaps non-believers, not able to see the large, you know, the bigger picture. What enabled you to stay with it and to continue pushing forward?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, there has been a lot of increased momentum in carbon removal. Now, just about every scientific study about how do we eliminate the carbon problem brings carbon removal into the equation. That was not happening at the 2018, 2019. So now most scientific studies estimate that about 10 megatons per year of CO2 will have to be removed to get to net zero, because removing or stopping all emissions is just too hard. Then, of course, for every year that passes where we don't achieve the reductions in emissions that we need, the need for carbon removal to remove yesterday's emissions grows in importance too. So the scientific consensus around the need for carbon removal has been significant. We've started to see it matched in the commercial and the government areas. So, for example, here in the United States, the Inflation Recovery Act identified carbon removal as a key technology that the government wanted to support and make the United States a leader in, and that's fantastic. Commercially, we're seeing companies like Meta, Microsoft, Amazon, and others, Frontier, Stripe, Shopify, looking at buying carbon removal as a way of kickstarting the industry because they recognize it's going to be essential. So I often tell people it is night and day for me developing a company today in carbon removal than it was when I joined Carbon Engineering back in 2018. It is a dramatically different picture, much better.
Now, I know one of the arguments in the past has been cost, you know, with direct air capture, the cost versus the benefit. Can you shed some light on that conversation?
Yeah, I mean, direct air capture is hard, or carbon removal full stop is hard. You know, CO2 in the atmosphere is 400 parts per million, and that's the equivalent of one drop of ink in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. So technologies to remove it inevitably are difficult. So the cost base for direct air capture, I remember when I started at Carbon Engineering in 2018, 2019, the received wisdom is that direct air capture could not be done for less than $1,000 a ton. At Carbon Engineering, we believed it can be done much cheaper than that. And I think Occidental are telling people they expect to be at a price of about $250 a ton by the end of the decade. Other companies like Heirloom, Carbon Capture, Climeworks have also now come into the sector. They're also aiming to get costs down. The U.S. Department of Energy has set up a carbon moonshot, which seeks to get to $100 a ton within a decade for carbon removal. So I think we're on a positive trend of getting the costs down across the industry, and that's good progress. But it's not. There's no miracle here. It's this is a challenging technology and a challenging application.
And how was that journey to the exit?
I mean, I think with Carbon Engineering, we built the company from, I think it was 12 people when I joined to about 150 when I left. We demonstrated some significant credibility with our pilot plants, the contracts that we have with external entities. Occidental got very interested in the business. They could see great potential for a new business line. One of the things we did at Carbon Engineering was we had a fairly innovative business model in that we licensed our technology to third parties. And one of the advantages of that is it allows the third party to also develop a profitable growth-based business plan in the energy transition. And a lot of the large companies are looking at, you know, how are we going to evolve in the energy transition? What's going to be our business line when fossil fuels get retired? And so Occidental looked at what Carbon Engineering was doing and was very excited by that. And of course, eventually decided that we worked very closely with them at Carbon Engineering. It's a great partnership. And Occidental eventually decided that the technology was so important for them, they wanted to be fully in control. And that's hence the acquisition that happened last year.
And do you know what Occidental plans to do with the carbon it captures?
It has a variety of different applications that they're looking at, basically three categories. They're what I call pure sequestration. That's when you take a CO2 molecule out of the atmosphere and put it permanently, safely back into the ground, and you create a negative emission to offset somebody else's positive emission. So that's application number one. Application number two is things like making synthetic fuels. So to replace a liquid fuel, you need a hydrocarbon. Hydrocarbon is hydrogen CO2. So you need CO2 as part of that. And so one of the things that Occidental and others is looking at for sure is making synthetic fuels out of fuels, kerosene, methanol, and others. So that's the second application. You make a fuel whose CO2 content was taken out of the atmosphere in advance. And then in the Occidental case, they've been quite open about, they also use some of the CO2 to make what they call net zero oil. This is where you use CO2 as part of the enhanced oil recovery process, and you put CO2 from the atmosphere down into the well, which creates a flow of more oil back up. And the CO2 that you used as part of that process is retained under the ground. And hence the footprint, the carbon footprint of the oil you bring up is now less than the carbon footprint of oil that you just take out of the ground without using CO2. So for Occidental, my understanding is, of course, I'm not involved with Occidental or Carbon Engineering these days, but my understanding from their public pronouncements is that all three of those use cases are part of their business plan.
That's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. Now, let's make the leap to Captura. Can you give us an overview of Captura and why you decided to join?
Yeah, so Captura offers a different approach to the challenge of removing CO2 from the atmosphere. And it comes from a very simple concept. So I met the Captura team when I was still at Carbon Engineering. And one of the things that really interested me was the fact that the ocean is a tremendously effective existing carbon removal device. This is something I hadn't really appreciated. So, as I mentioned, when carbon in the atmosphere is 400 parts per million, to remove a lot of CO2 from the atmosphere, you have to move a lot of air. So you have to touch a lot of air. You have to absorb the CO2 into something and then extract the CO2 out. So that's what Carbon Engineering, Climeworks, and other companies in the carbon removal sector do. Captura's approach is to say, wait a minute, the ocean already does that for us. The ocean absorbs about 30% of all emissions today. It does so at the cost of ocean acidification, blanching of the coral reefs, other things that you'll have heard about. So Captura was formed on the basis of, if we can take CO2 out of the ocean, then the ocean will take more CO2 out of the air. And the advantage of doing that is the ocean already exists. It's already at huge scale. Costs us nothing, it's already there. So Captura's technology basically removes CO2 from the ocean using only renewable electricity. No input material, no absorbents. It produces no byproducts. The only thing we do is separate the CO2 that's in the ocean from the ocean water itself. And because of a natural phenomenon called Henry's Law, when you take CO2 out of the ocean then takes it out of the air. So we achieve removal from the atmosphere via the ocean without adding to CO2 levels in the ocean itself. It's a very clean concept. I love the idea that it combines the best of the natural world with the best of technology to produce what I think will be a very effective carbon removal tool.
So it sounds to some extent you're almost eliminating the middleman by using the ocean.
Yeah, I mean, one way of looking at it is that companies like direct air capture companies like Carbon Engineering, Climeworks and others use an absorbent to absorb the CO2. We use the ocean as the absorbent, but we don't wish to add to ocean acidification. There's already more than enough CO2 in the ocean. So by taking the CO2 out of the ocean first, you create the room for the drawdown from the atmosphere.
And what kind of renewable energy are you using to power your plant?
So one of the criticisms of carbon removal is it requires a lot of energy, which is true. And people will say, surely we should use that renewable energy to try and replace, for example, a fossil fuel and stop an emission before using it for carbon removal. And those are valid points. At Captura, we're ocean-based. Our process works on salty water. And so for us, renewable energy from the ocean is really interesting. You know, the ocean covers 70% of the world's surface. So the opportunity for wind and solar-based renewable energy at ocean sites is very wide. You've also got, of course, the movement of ocean water, tides, waves, and they can also be used to generate electricity. So today there isn't a lot of offshore energy because there's no customers. So for us, we can see ourselves being a ocean-based technology using renewable energy that nobody else needs. You can't use it for any other purpose, and converting that renewable energy into negative CO2 emissions. And I think that's really interesting. We avoid a conflict with other decarbonization efforts that also need renewable electricity.
Are you familiar with a company called CalWave?
Yes, I think so. Yes.
I interviewed the CEO last year, and I think there might be an interesting conversation between your team and his team.
Yeah, I can't remember where they're based, but I've heard of the company for sure. Obviously for us at the moment, we're focused on demonstrating and proving our technology. We have a pilot that's underway at the Port of Los Angeles. We have another one that's under construction for Norway. Once we've fully demonstrated our technology and got it all working optimally, then we expect to go into commercial deployment, and then we'll be looking for partnerships with the renewable energy sector.
So you mentioned technology a couple of times, and you mentioned using renewable technology to power the plant. Can you give us kind of paint a picture for us of the technology of your actual unit or the plant itself?
Yeah, I'll try and explain the chemistry, put simply, and then I'll describe why you get this drawdown from the atmosphere using it and quite a good analogy.
Sure.
So the way our process works, we pull ocean water into our plant. We then take a very small percentage of that ocean water, about 0.5%, and we run it through a process called electrodialysis. That's the proprietary technology that Captura has developed with Caltech, the university in California. Electrodialysis dissociates molecules. So in the case of salt water, you have sodium chloride, salt, hydrogen, oxygen, which is water. In the electrodialysis step, we split the salt water and rearrange those molecules into hydrochloric acid and sodium hydroxide. Sodium hydroxide is an alkali. We then take the acid and we put it into the flow of ocean water as it goes through the plant. That acidifies it locally within the plant and creates a reaction with the CO2 that's held in the ocean. And we then can collect that CO2. Then before we put the ocean water back into the ocean, we add the alkali that we made, the sodium hydroxide, back in to re-neutralize the ocean flow. And that goes out into the ocean. So no input material, no waste products. All we do is split the CO2 in the ocean water. So for a lot of people, I know when I joined Captura, I didn't understand this. Actually, I wasn't even aware of it. The reason why the ocean absorbs CO2 from the atmosphere, it's defined by something called Henry's Law that says there has to be an equilibrium between the CO2 in the atmosphere and the CO2 in the ocean. And that the best way to think of this is a can of soda. So if I give you a can of soda, the people who made that can of soda put excess CO2 into it to make it fizzy, because we all like a fizzy drink. You open the can, you pour it out into a glass, and you put it on the table, and you come back half an hour later. When you come back, the soda's gone flat. So why is that? Well, the simple reason is there's more CO2 in the soda than there is in the atmosphere. There has to be equilibrium. So the CO2 in the soda is pulled out by the atmosphere. That's all the bubbles that you see going up. Mm-hmm. And the soda goes flat. So that's Henry's Law in action. So what we do is reverse the process, basically. Think of us taking CO2 out of the soda, the ocean. And by doing so, you create a disequilibrium. And so the atmosphere puts the CO2 back. So that's a little bit about how the technology works and why you get this drawdown. So with this effect, what you can now do is you can use the ocean as your air contactor, as your absorbent. It's available at massive scale, 70% of the world's surface, and it's a proven technology. It does its job. So that's the concept of Captura. That's our approach to carbon removal.
What do you plan on doing with the captured carbon?
So we have the same business model at Captura that I used at Carbon Engineering, which is licensing to partners. So the partners have the same three use cases that I described earlier on. It creates mm-hmm. a negative emission by burying CO2, make a product like a synthetic fuel, or potentially enhanced oil recovery, although right now we have no plans to do any enhanced oil recovery.
So you would ship or pipe the CO2 back to shore?
So that's one option, but of course, a lot of sequestration sites are offshore. I always tell people very, very simplistically, there's more nuance to it than this, but very simplistically, think of a sequestration candidate site as a place from which you have extracted oil and gas resources in the past. Those locations are accustomed to holding, in the case of CO2, liquid CO2. And so consequently, you can reuse them and become sequestration sites. So one of our interesting use cases for Captura is we put our technology on an old oil and gas platform on top of an existing sequestration site, because that's where the oil and gas platform took oil or gas out of the ocean. So then you actually sequester in situ. You sequester under the ocean right where you are.
That makes sense. And then from a business model perspective, you would sell the credits?
Yeah, and that's becoming a larger market as time goes by. You know, as governments and customer and shareholder pressure forces companies to look at how they can eliminate their carbon footprint, it's difficult. There's a certain amount of carbon footprint that can be eliminated relatively straightforwardly. For example, using renewable electricity rather than, for example, coal-fired electricity. but there's also a lot of carbon footprint that is really hard to get rid of. There really is no alternative at the moment, or I don't see one on the horizon anytime soon, for air travel that is decarbonized at source. Long duration shipping, trucks, steel making, agriculture. There are many sectors of the economy where fossil fuels are so integrally linked with the way those sectors work today. And of course, they're sectors that are crucial for the economy and across the planet. So to decarbonize at source is really hard. If you can't decarbonize at source, then do the next best thing, which is remove your CO2 footprint as soon as it's created. And that's what carbon removal does. So there is a growing market for carbon credits for sure.
Now, when you were illustrating the plant, you mentioned neutralizing the water that goes back into the ocean. If any, is there any effect for the marine life in the area of the plant?
So across the globe, there are different standards for wastewater. We look at quite a high standard, which is, for example, the California standards on wastewater. They look at oxygen levels, pH levels, temperature, soluble solids. You don't want too many solids in your water, otherwise it blocks light, which affects marine life. Our outflow will be consistent with those standards. So we do not expect to have any negative impact. We have oceanographers on our team. We're actually using that facility I mentioned in the port of Los Angeles, one of our pilots, to do ocean testing, and we will continue to do that. We've published our plan, and we will publish the results. So we're very conscious of the fact that maintaining marine life standards and the health of the ocean is critical, and it's a top priority for us.
Now, can you give us some idea from a footprint perspective? You mentioned the unused or perhaps abandoned oil rigs, but from a footprint perspective, how big would one of your plants be? And would it be like noticeable from above the water? How, can you illustrate that for us?
Yeah, so we, let's talk about a couple of flavors of plants. There's a lot of infrastructure onshore that moves ocean water today. So think of the desalination industry. Think of ocean water cooling in power plants or chemical plants. Our process doesn't change ocean chemistry. So we can sit on the back of those processes and install a carbon removal plant. So that's really interesting. We can sit on the back of a desalination plant and add carbon removal to the benefit of one of those plants. And
I think co-locating?
Co-locating, yes. Literally sitting on the waste pipe of a desalination plant, which is concentrated brine, concentrated salt water, and we put our plant on the back of that. Now you do carbon removal too. And there's 16,000 desalination plants in the world today and more planned. Other examples, I mentioned the oil and gas platforms. We estimate that one of the large oil and gas platforms could accommodate between 500,000 tons and 1 million tons of carbon removal per year on a single oil and gas platform. Oil and gas platforms vary in size, but there's 3,500 in the Gulf of Mexico alone. And as we go energy transition,
Steve.
Yeah.
Did you say 3,500 in the Gulf of Mexico?
Yes. Yeah, of varying sizes and so on. So as we go through the energy transition and ultimately stop our dependency on fossil fuels, that's quite a lot of infrastructure that we can repurpose to do things like carbon removal. And to me, that's quite an interesting opportunity.
That's a lot of stranded assets.
Yeah, ultimately, from an economics point of view, those would become stranded assets on the balance sheet of an energy company or a similar company. So they're keen to find ways to keep using them. Also good to have a repurposing of those assets for the communities, the employees that work on those today.
I'm just still wrapping my brain around that number. I didn't imagine there were that many, especially in that, and I'm going to say small, relatively speaking, you know, area of water, body of water.
Yeah, there's I can't remember where it is, but it's there's a U.S. government website that allows you to see all of those things, 3,500.
I'm going to go find it. So you mentioned you're at pilot right now. What are some of the challenges ahead of you getting to scale?
Well, so one of the biggest challenges is that we talked earlier on about direct air capture, and there's been so much momentum in that area, which is fantastic. But it has created a situation where people are preferring a technology versus preferring a solution. So, for example, the 45Q tax credit in the United States has been very powerful for direct air capture. It's about $180 a ton, but it applies only to technologies that remove CO2 directly from the ambient air. And our technology removes from the ocean removes from the air. Similarly, there is a DAC Hubs program where the U.S. Department of Energy will put in up to 50 cents on the dollar of the construction cost of a DAC plant, only a DAC plant. So for us, we call our technology direct ocean capture, and we do not qualify for those programs today. So consequently, we find ourselves at a disadvantage compared to any DAC company. So obviously, we're promoting strongly the fact that our end product is exactly the same, removal of CO2 from the atmosphere. Our technology base has inherent cost advantages and has great opportunity for scale. Oceans are really big. And so why can we not be included in those structures as well? Because otherwise you're prioritizing technologies that might not be as efficient. So that's a definite barrier for us. We're working on that. We're talking to people about our technology and about what we do. We're not the only ocean-based carbon removal company in the world. There are others. But that's a significant barrier for us today.
So what are we doing to get those rules changed?
Talking to a lot of politicians, talking to environmental groups. Environmental groups, of course, quite correctly are concerned about ocean health. So we go through our process. We explain how our process is not adding anything to the ocean. We don't add any material. We're not doing ocean dumping. We're not changing ocean characteristics. We're not, you know, planting new species at large volumes inside the ocean. We're not changing the ocean. All we're doing is taking the CO2 out that mankind's activities put in, and we're removing that. So going through that education process is important, both with the various NGOs, charities, groups that look after ocean health, as well as the various politicians on both sides of the political spectrum. Of course, we have an election this year in the United States, so I don't expect a lot of change this year because government starts to slow down as you head into an election. But for us, it's a big focus for next year for sure.
Now, you mentioned putting things into the ocean. The ocean can be quite deadly up against, you know, certain equipment. You know, you're putting the plant in the water there. How does the equipment hold up to the ocean water?
Yeah, it's a great question. The ocean, of course, is a slightly corrosive environment because of salt. We've been running a pilot since August 2022. It actually started out at Newport Beach in California, and now we've moved it to the Port of Los Angeles. And one of the things we do is we actually use some of the chemical that we generate within our plant from the ocean water to backwash our membranes and the equipment at the front of the system. And that way, we've had really positive results of many thousand hours of operation, very stable. So part of the proprietary technology that Capture has is this backwashing mechanism. Again, not using any chemicals introduced into the system, but using the chemicals that we produce from electrodialysis of the ocean water. So we've had really good results there. Of course, a lot of the rest of the equipment in our plant is things like pumps, filters. Those things are being used in industries like desalination today, and they've been engineered for long life. So lifetime is actually pretty good for our technology approach.
You know, getting back to the marine life for a minute there, does your plant actually suck water in, or how does it work? And what's the prevention for harm for marine life there at the entry point?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we have filters on the front end of the plants. Same approach as, for example, the desalination industry does. So very high mesh filters to prevent pulling anything into our plant of significance. And again, that's really important for ocean health. So there's lots of work and research done that for in that field for things like desalination and power utilities that use ocean water for cooling. We just borrow the same concepts and the same technology.
So let's talk about you, Steve. This is your second go around. What are some of the learnings that you're bringing from carbon engineering to Captura besides patience?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think one of the key things is it's difficult to understand initially just how large this problem is of CO2 in the atmosphere. It is an enormous problem, and its impacts will be felt for generations to come. Even if we stopped all emissions today, we have still built a volume of CO2 in the atmosphere that's going to affect climate for many, many years to come. So the problem is huge. So, you know, I think it's quite common now that commentators are saying the carbon removal industry needs to be as big as the oil and gas industry is today. That's huge, and we have to build it quick. So for me, one of the key things, two key things. First of all, partnership. So working with companies that can help you get to deployment faster. Some of those companies might be energy companies, and they have workforce, they have capital, they have infrastructure that understand the types of technologies that we're deploying. So even though they may be involved in the fossil fuel industry today, for me, working with those companies to deploy faster is a sensible thing to do. So partnerships, I think, to help you achieve scale fast. You know, it's difficult to imagine a small company developing enough size to do this alone. The second point I would make is education, continuously education. It remains the case that a lot of people think of climate change as we have to stop today's emissions. And if we just stop fossil fuel use, everything will be fine. It's extremely hard to stop fossil fuel use. Its role in many sectors of the economy is huge. So, and it's not all about stopping today's emissions. Sure, we have to stop today's emissions as quickly as we can. But then the legacy of emissions that we've built up is going to cause a massive problem for years to come. So the briefing the awareness of the role of taking CO2 out of the atmosphere and its importance into the feasibility of getting to net zero and the need to remove the legacy continues to be really important. And I've seen a lot of progress on that, but nowhere near enough. It remains something that a lot of people just don't understand.
I see you right now in a very similar position to when I spoke to you in 2020. You know, we were both kind of peering out over the horizon, and then 2023, you were fortunate enough to exit with Occidental. Let's fast forward from here 10 years. Let's give us a 10-year runway. It's 2033. If Fast Company, Forbes, Wall Street Journal, pick your favorite publication, were to write a headline about Captura, what would you like it to read?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I'm never going to be a headline writer, but I think the story behind the headline would be a core enabling technology that has allowed us to remove enormous amounts of CO2. That's the golden goose that we have to figure out for climate. Stopping emissions is really important. Don't ever misunderstand me. But without the ability to remove huge amounts of CO2 from the atmosphere, we have a climate problem for decades to come. So if I was to go 10 years into the future and find that every dream that I have in this business came true, it would be that there has been a recognition and an adoption of carbon removal technology at large scale. And I think Captura has one of the best, if not the best, technologies in the sector. So we would be right at the heart of that. In the same way that, you know, every computer in the world has got, you know, a chip from Intel or somebody similar, in the way that probably just about every car in the world has electric batteries in them in the future, the technology behind the change in approach, I would like Captura, Carbon Engineering, and others to be the technology behind that, because we have to do it. We have to build a large sector that removes carbon from the atmosphere. It's essential for our kids and for their kids.
It is. Now, last question, your second go around as a entrepreneur, if you could share some advice, words of wisdom, specifically for entrepreneurs that are perhaps aspiring to, or let's say in your shoes, that are maybe early on in their journey and are struggling against the naysayers and, you know, explaining their vision, what are one or two pieces of advice you would give them, or words of wisdom?
Yeah, and another good question. Let me separate it into two things. The first thing I would say to those entrepreneurs is be aware of your own strengths and weaknesses and pull in people around you to make up for your weaknesses. A lot of entrepreneurs in the early days tend to take everything on themselves. Just a little anecdote on this. When I joined Carbon Engineering, I think the week before I joined, the company had produced the first fuel in the world made from atmospheric CO2. And the story was on, I think, page 7 of the local newspaper in Squamish, the small Canadian town where Carbon Engineering was. And that was it. And the reason was because the PR was being done by one of the engineers alongside his day job. And the guy was doing everything he could. But we brought in a PR professional who actually knows how to do this stuff and got our message out, got our story out, and away we went. So there's an example of recognize your weakness and find a partner or somebody on your team, bring somebody into your team to make up for the weakness, rather than trying to do it all yourself. We all have strengths and weaknesses. Then the second thing, so that's kind of a build your team comment. With respect to presenting your business to the outside world, there's a theory in business that you should never, the three points on the compass. There is the technology that you're using, there is the market that you're serving, and then there is the sales process. How do people buy? And if you're looking to expand your company, you should never change more than one of those three variables. For something like carbon removal, we are doing all three of those things at once. We're breaking every single rule of business in trying to create a new industry fast when the technology doesn't exist yet, the market's unclear, and the sales process is unclear. So when you're trying to do something like that and make a real change, the way I approach that is I try and set the long-term vision. This is where we're going to get to. This is what we have to achieve. And that should be a very inspiring, ideally attractive, financially attractive end goal. Then you can't figure out all the way to get there. So figure out the next 1 to 2 years and have a really strong plan for the steps you're going to take to start embarking on that journey. Don't worry about years 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Just focus on the first 2 years and have your end goal. And then that way, as you go through those first 2 years, people will look back and say, oh, I remember this. He said or she said they were going to do X and Y. And that's exactly what they did. So now they're saying they're going to do the following in years 3 and 4. Well, they were right last time. Why wouldn't I believe them this time? So you build credibility and you get to implement your plan over time. And when I look back, when you invited me back on the podcast, Raj, I look back on what I said 3.5 years ago when I was at Carbon Engineering, and I was pleased to see that the things that you asked me then, and I said, here's what Carbon Engineering is going to do, mm-hmm. those things came true. And that builds credibility. So to an entrepreneur, two things. You know, form the team that covers your weaknesses, and then put together a grand vision, and then deliver on the first 2 years. And then people will trust that you'll deliver on the rest.
You know, I always tell my children, we have to be directionally correct.
Yes, it's a very similar thing. Start off on the right path.
Exactly.
Don't worry about the entire route, but start off on the right path.
Yep. Well, Steve, it's been a pleasure. I wish you all the best with Captura, and look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Likewise. Let's make sure it's not 3.5 years.
All right, Steve.
All right. Take care.
You too. Thank you for listening. If you like our show, please give us a rating and review on iTunes. And you can show your support by sharing our show with a friend or reach out to us on social media, where you'll find us under our Nexus PMG handle. If there's a subject or topic you'd like to hear about, send me an email, btu@nexuspmg.com, or contact me via our website, nexuspmg.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter, where we share what we're reading and thinking about in the clean tech, green tech sectors. Bigger Than Us is a Nexus PMG production.